we could talk about both of you being on the other side of the table now, because can we maybe, if you're open to it, like get into the audition process and how you both go about it. Whether at UCF, which I of course I would love to hear about, and all of our Florida fans, or like let's say if like just whatever show you're directing and choreographing, how do you go about the audition process and specifically a dance audition?
I mean, I think it's really different for every project. Like when we did prom at UCF, I was really heavily involved in it because it is such a huge dance show. It's just sort of like project driven. So, you take like summer where, me, Michael Bello has been the director pretty much since the associate director since the inception of it. And then, so it's like Bello, myself, and the music director, and we really do work as a team. But because it's such a dance-heavy show, I think I probably have a lot more input than I would on another show. Like for instance, like Little Shop, or even like Jersey Boys, where nobody's going to be removed from the room because of their dance ability. If they're the right person for the job, they're the right person for the job. Versus like a show like Summer, it's like they can't, everybody has to be a triple threat. Everybody has to be incredible. One of the hardest shows I've ever been a part of. It's the casting for that is brutal. It's really, really difficult because everybody has to be a ringer. And so working on a show like that, where normally it's like, well, but they're the right person for this principal track. Well, that principal track needs to be an Ariana DeBose. So it's really, really challenging. But I think every project is a little bit different and every team works a little bit differently. Some directors really, want the rest of the team to be heavily involved. Some of them want them to really sit back and they want to kind of run the show. And you just have to sort of, I think, roll with it. However, you can be of best use, I think, in the room.
Are these things that you both talk about before the process even starts, kind of in your pre-production talks? Or like do you have everything mapped out before auditions start?
No, I mean, like for the prom, we leaving room for, it's not like, oh, I've got to be, it's more like you get an sense of the characters and then try to leave yourself open to be surprised. Like somebody might come in and wow, you'll be like, oh, never thought of this role in this way, but maybe we try to make that work, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I think that's like half of what your job is as a director, is to sort of create a safe enough space to allow creativity to really flourish. And it's not so much about like micromanaging your vision for it, because that's not, the people that come in the room are always going to bring something innately them, intrinsically them, that broadens the whole scope of the whole concept. So I think if you have such a narrow point of view, you're going to miss out on a lot of the magic, right? Like a lot of the good stuff.
Yeah.
I think if you just create the space where it's like you have where it's safe and there's a freedom to sort of explore and create together, I think you're going to get the best stuff.
I have to say I agree 100% with what you said. I remember I did a production of Lost in Yonkers by Neil Simon in ninth grade, and we got to rehearsal, got to the first rehearsal, and everyone, they were like, don't bring your own script. We're going to give you a script. And every single piece of blocking was already written in for us. And I was like, wow. I thought, because I was only in ninth grade, but I was acting with adults. I was, me and the kid playing my brother, I was playing Jay and the kid playing Artie. But everyone else were adults. But I think everyone was kind of like, okay, this is good. We don't have to bring our pencils to rehearsal, But like, I think things did change. Things probably got modified a little bit, but we were able to do run-throughs from like the minute it started. And we probably had a 2 month rehearsal period too.
Good grief.
That was probably one of the best shows I ever did because we had so much time to just sit with the characters because we didn't have to worry about the blocking. Because also the blocking was pretty fucking good too. Like it was like, I don't even know how this director did it.
You know, I remember when I got put in as Tommy, you know, in a few different companies where they would talk about, they're like, yes, they're like, you have to hit, you know, this certain thing and on this number, and then, you know, automation's flying in. So for safety and hit your spotlight and all that, you're going to hand it a guitar. But they said, it's almost like you get to then inside this box, then make the character your own, is the way it was explained to me, where it's kind of like, be as original as you want, but by playing by these rules. Do you know what I mean? And so, you know, I felt like, and I do remember when moving from the First National to Broadway, because I think for safety's sake, because moving theaters and all this kind of thing, our show was much like tighter in terms of like, hit exactly this number, go here on this exact word, that kind of thing. That when I got to the Broadway company, I remember the stage manager going like, whoa, like, you're like hitting this exact thing, and turned to like, just kind of come to this area of the stage. And I'm like,
yeah.
What?
That part.
And I remember when, have you guys interviewed Richard Blake yet?
Yes.
Right. I remember when he was taking over for Tommy, and he learned Tommy from me on Broadway. And I remember I took over for Andy Carl, and then Rich, like, I kind of like was in that gap, right? And it's funny because I remember Richard was like, okay, he was just starting rehearsal and he saw Andy. He's like, anyway, yeah, he's like, I'll be good. Maybe I'll catch your last show. We'll see. And I was like, cool, man, whatever you need. And then, you know, because Richard is a freaking, I mean, what has he done? 575 Broadway shows. I played leads in all of them. So I was like, well, he's Richard Blake. I'm sure he's got it. You know, that kind of thing. And I remember he came back about a week later and he was like, hey, man, can I trail you? And we like walking around, and I'm like, because I've been doing the show for so long, I was like, and the cards, I'm like, I prep them like this. And this is the card trick that I usually do. And I put this card here, make sure they go in this pocket, one pick here, make sure the picks, in, like showing them all, like where I like the picks in the guitar, you know, and like where I keep things for safety, you know, where the keys go, how the keys should be in your pocket to get them the easy, all this kind of thing. And he was laughing. He was like, oh man, this is gold. He's like, you know, like pick, got it. And he told me afterward, he's like, I'm so glad I came backstage. He's like, this is, and I'm like, this is, I'm like, this is just years of like the buildup, like you're saying, of the minutia, but that makes it look effortless. You know, mine and Kylie's first kiss was on stage.
It was a stage.
No. That's the joke. Cause yeah, you know, we were friends.
We were
first.
Always professional.
Right. Oh, we were friends first, but you know what I mean? That's the joke is that, oh yeah. Well, the first time we, you know, stage kiss, it was actually on stage when we were just.
Well, so when did you start dating?
End of the Jersey Boys tour. So what, like 2013,
12
into 13, that region.
I guess it did end in 13.
And then she moved to the West Coast and I was back to New York. And so it was kind of like, you know, I don't know, man. And so we kind of like took a break. And then it's when she came back for, to do the Broadway show. And we had like one drink and it was like, I was in love. Yeah.
Sweet. We're actually going to be, you know, doing a show. We're performing together this summer.
Oh my gosh,
which is
that's
so
right.
Funny. We haven't really
forgot
performed in a show together in years. So that'll be fun. I haven't like, you know, I haven't really put any focus on performing in a long time because I've been sort of all, you know, all in on this other side of the craft. But it's, yeah, I find it so, I don't want to say more fulfilling. It's just, I'm in a different phase of my life now too. And I have really leaned into, I don't know, doing something fresh and new. And also It's been, there's been a learning curve to it. And it's been nice to feel a little bit like uncomfortable. Like, how do I navigate this new normal? Yeah. And when you are feeling all of those things, I think that's where, like, that's, again, that's where the good stuff is. That's where the growth comes. That's where you start to like break out of this shell and push past any boundary that you've given to yourself. And I don't know, I think it's exciting and new. And
it reminds me of that David Bowie quote where David Bowie used to say, where you go to that artistically, go to that part of the pool where you just barely can't touch. Mm-hmm. That's where the good stuff is.
Going from that, like, how do y'all navigate working together as partners?
John and I are actually in, I don't know why, but we have like a very harmonious work environment, and we've never had any conflict ever at work. We really draw on each other's strengths. And I think we both, like, neither one of us fight the other one in their area of expertise. I know what John does really, really well. And I know that I can look at him and be like, we need to take these two actors and you need to diagnose this scene and like really figure out, like take it apart and make it stunning. And then I will.
It's like handoffs.
Yeah.
Right?
Like there's like a group of 50 bodies. I'm like, I know exactly what to do with them. And in a way that a lot of people would feel really overwhelmed by just the sheer magnitude of that. I'm like, ooh, that's like, I'm really like operating all cylinders there. And he doesn't really have any interest in doing that. Yeah. So we both, I think, you know, we co-directed this last job that we did together. And
it worked great.
There was just never any conflict or ego. I think we both start by like, you just, everybody in our room, like check the ego at the door because it does not serve anybody, including us. So that's sort of how we lead. And
it's interesting too, to be like, you know, like, hey, can you handle this transition? And like, yeah, I got that. Great. I need to go talk to these two people, mm-hmm. you know, like blah, 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 tidbits, acting, this kind of thing. And then, hey, I'm done. And so it's constantly kind of like, slaloming each other. Mm-hmm. And it's, you just kind of get used to it. I don't know. I feel like then you get twice as much done because you're just bopping around.
Yes, because you trust each other, number one, and two, just not micromanaging. I think that's a big thing that both of us are dealing with right now, and a lot of younger people. I feel like it's just because everyone's so afraid of making a mistake. Where, you know, even with, you know, getting ready like before auditions and everything too, like it's just too much. It's just too in your head, and then you forget the big things. Or when you have to do like get 50 people in the room, you get wigged out and you don't know where to go.
Yeah.
I think we're pretty good at that too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. We're very like, we check our egos at the door. And I know what she's good at and she knows, and we both complement each other really well.
Yeah.
My community theater director growing up, it was a husband and wife, and they've been together like 60 years at this point. It's amazing. And they're so sweet. But they used to shout at each other in front of everyone. I owe them my life, but they used to fucking go at each other. She used to walk out. He used to walk out. It's so fucking awkward. This is.
But that's the thing. Wow. It's like, you know, being on the, we've all, I think, been on the receiving end of that dynamic, whether it's a married couple or whether it's just an artistic team that doesn't gel, and it's nothing gets done, the work suffers, and everybody ultimately feels like shit.
Yeah.
So we've just sort of like, we've made a pact that we would never, there's even like moments like this last, you know, thing that we did where, you know, John wasn't there, and I'd be like, oh, why are, like, what's going on at this moment, or why, like, explain to me. And they're like, and I could see them being a little bit weird. It's like, yeah, don't do this. Like, and they're like,
we got conflicting information from you guys. Yeah.
Okay. I'm like, great. Good to know. We're going to talk
about
that.
We're going
to
talk it over.
And we're
going
to come back to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I'm not right. He's not right. Yeah. We're going to have a conversation about it, and we'll come back to where this is an uncomfortable.
What did you tell them to do? Excuse us.
Yeah. That's like Fiddler on the Roof. He's right. They can't both be right. You know, you're also right.
Yeah. I think a theme of our conversation is like is two things. Like one is leaving room for inspiration and like the Sergio way, and then like it leaves room for things to like to adapt if you need to. But also, and this is very similar to what we do in sketch now, where because the beauty of some theater, not all theater, but some of it, and with comedy, which of course you're going to have in Jersey Boys and every show, is that there are rules. There is a game, you know, to every scene and then act and then the entire show. So it is learning how to work within those parameters. But I feel like in a brand new show, it's like how do you figure that out in a timely manner, you know, and also be like so, for example, let's say you both are working on a brand new show, you've never seen the book before, it's so new to you. How would you go about it? Like how would you figure out how much time to give? Okay, the first two scenes, we'll work on these today. And would you let the actors kind of do their thing, see what happens naturally, and then reel it back later? Or would you start with an idea you have first? Like, I'm just curious how you're directing.
Yeah, it is a great question. I'm like, I think you start with the bodies that are in the room, right? And see what they, because it's an actor's responsibility to come in with something too, to come in with a point of view. And if it's a brand new work, like what you got, you know, I think everybody should come into the space prepared to contribute something. So I think, you know, you kind of suss out, like, I probably would be like, okay, like I'd have a general like roadmap of where I want the scene to go, see what the actors bring to it, and then kind of build from there. And I'm pretty good at like thinking on the fly, and like, I'm good at like energy moving, you know, I'm good at getting the energy of a momentum of a scene to kind of drive to the goal that I needed to go to as the creative, and compiling that with what the actors deliver as well.
Yeah, it just reminded me of last summer I directed a play called Summertime, where it was a new work, and it was by this guy that wrote for the HBO show Southside and a couple other different TV shows. And he came in and we worked on this production, and he was even doing rewrites in the room as we were, you know, working on it. And it was fascinating because I initially had this kind of concept of how I saw these characters, and everything morphed once I saw how the actors were interpreting it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's still, I mean, the story was still the same and everything like that, but I feel like my direction changed based on how we were developing the characters together. And then like, oh, this one character I thought was going to be funnier and more physical, and he, like, the actor brought this very kind of stoic feel to it. I'm like, oh, it almost flipped the like straight man comic duo. It like flipped it on its head, and I went like, oh wow, this is really fascinating. Like, you know, and made the bad guy funnier, which is always more compelling. And like, mm-hmm. I don't know. It's exactly what you were saying, which is you have to come in with some sort of vision. You know, it can't just be, you know, first day of rehearsal, we're all just kinetic sand. You know, it has to be like, you have to have some sort of vision, but then be malleable enough to be like, okay, that's not what I was anticipating, but happy accidents. Let's, mm-hmm. you know, follow this where it's going to go. It was interesting going back to the prom for a second, because, you know, there's these students who are in a bunch of different productions. And I don't know how your guys' collegiate productions were directed or anything like that. But my thinking was, I'm like, well, you know, yes, I think it's very important to both kind of, when you're directing students, to both teach and direct and all that. But in putting, to make sure you get a big musical up on time, I even just said, I'm like, look, we're going to kind of run this like a professional show. And I'll answer questions, and I'll, you know, we'll direct and coach and everything like that. But we have so much to accomplish, and especially the dancing and everything had to run a tight ship. And it was so wild to watch, like, you know, talking to the students, kind of almost like the debrief afterwards. They were like, we've never worked so hard in our lives. Like, we've never had a dance like that. We've never had this, like the rehearsal of, you know, like this. And one of the guys even said, he's like, I had heard of these other shows where it was, you know, we're discovering it together. And we like played and we did this whole like warm-up thing. And we were like, it is 6:30. You know what I mean? Yeah. And
that doesn't mean one is right or wrong.
No.
So I should make sure that I don't sound like, you know, get off my lawn like an old boomer or anything. I think there is a time and place for all of it. I really do. We are noticing there is like a shift artistically, I don't know. That's my diagnosis of it.
Well, but what was interesting was this younger artist was saying, he said, I actually liked getting both. Yeah. He said, I've been in those productions. He said, so it was really neat to be in a room with you guys where it was like go time.
Wherever it serves the story the most, I think. And with your experience, you know, with your BA program, but I'll tell, I can promise you this, at least for the class of 2014 to 2018, when I was at UCF, like if for the BFA students, they want it. And the BA students do too. They want to be whipped into shape. That's why they're in school. That's why they're paying for it. They want to have that discipline that maybe they weren't lucky enough to have in high school if they didn't have that kind of program, but they got into UCF. So I think that's a big thing too. So I just don't want you both to get discouraged or think that it is a generational thing. Like we're kind of more loosey goosey, because that's not true. Like we want it. And I think especially after COVID too, you know, because like everything has kind of seemed like a free for all, like, you know, for us, kids in our 20s, but also for me, I'm biased because I went to Catholic school. I grew up very, very strict. I'm very just neurotic about everything, but I think it does pay off.
I have a completely unrelated question.
Sure.
You mentioned tour two, and we found, so like 2018, I found this video on YouTube. It was called Lil Tay Jersey Boys. And I'm like, what the fuck is Lil Tay? Like, and I open it, and it's this iPhone video of the tour taken from like the back of the balcony, one of these huge packs. And you can tell it's a Dodgers production, but it's like, I'm hearing this voice doing, that's our song. Oh, what a night. C'est soirée là, French. And for, I think about, no, it was 2 years that I didn't know who it was. And I remember who we were talking to about it. They're like, oh, that's Colby Foytick. So there were a lot of different voices as Tommy over the years. So many people played it without a voice. So many people did like more of an accent. What was interesting, when John Rochette did it, there were like always certain moments that his accent just dropped. And it was consistent every single time, but it just worked. So like
he's probably the true authentic Tommy, really. I mean, he is born and raised in Jersey.
Really, it's, you know? Yeah.
But he's like shiesty like Tommy in his like, you know, in all the ways that Tommy is like, I don't know, the lovable, like the anti-hero, the lovable anti-hero.
Yeah.
Like John just knows how to tap into that so well.
Yeah.
You know, they live down here too.
Yes, we know.
Yeah, they're like dear friends of ours now. We see them every week.
It's funny though, because you're talking about the dialect, right?
Yeah. So it's like, cause I guess it wasn't just the dialect, because because it happened with some of the Nickies too. Like some of them had like
the Matt Bogart
voices, and like, so how were you and some of your colleagues, co-Tommies, directed? Like how did that work?
Back in the day, they used to have us meet with Stephen Gabus, who is like the guy for dialect work. Like he did all the dialect work for like Boardwalk Empire and all this kind of thing. And so anytime you were even understudying a role, they would have you do a Zoom session with Steven and record everything. And I remember going over like the Tommy stuff with him and the Jip stuff for that matter, way back when. But he had said, the thing about Daleks now is that everything is kind of watered down. Mm-hmm. And he said, you have to remember that even just 50, 60, 80 years ago, whatever, he said, dialects were more regionalized. And he said, so you got more of a true Jersey accent, more of a true Bronx accent, you know, like dialect, I mean, true Bronx dialect. And he said, now with the internet and all this and cable news, you know, we it's all gets muddied. And he said, so he used to harp on the fact of that because it's set at this certain time period, that the dialects need to be ratcheted up just a little.
Gotcha. That's so interesting. Yes. Wow. That's amazing.
Now the Matt Bogart thing, whole voice that he created, that's like a character voice. And I feel like the big mistake that people run into when they play Nick is they think that Nick is Matt Bogart.
Yeah. They're playing Matt, not Nick.
And that's not true. And that's, I love what Matt does, but it's like, I feel like only Matt can do that because that's his character choice.
Mm-hmm. The first,
what a great choice. And
oh my God.
It could have worked or it could have fallen flat on its face. You know, mm-hmm. I always think about like the audition for him going in and making that choice. So bold. It was so ballsy.
And it really doesn't even pay off until like a third end of the play. The it's first so time you true. Hear him, you go, what's wrong with this guy? And
yeah.
then like gets in the groundwater, yes. and then the lines start landing with yes. the wind. And you,
where are they? The million guys, where are they?
I remember feeling like watching the show for the first time and watching Matt and being like, what does he do? I'm really confused. I don't understand this character choice at all. And then, I mean, by the sit down, you're in the palm of his hand.
Yeah.
Yep.
From day one, my friend.
Yep. Well, Kylie, for your audition, did you read for Mary first?
I did. Yeah. I actually have a funny story about Mary. Well, about my whole audition process, which is kind of funny because, you know, when it's all said and done, I guess, 13 years, I guess, I was involved with Jersey Boys. On and off, obviously, like a huge 5-year gap between closing Broadway and then jumping back in to, you know, New World with an hour's notice.
Yeah.
And being off the show for 5 years, that was fun. But yeah, I remember, you know, people kept telling me, oh, you should go in for Jersey Boys. You should go in for Jersey Boys. You'd be great in that show. You know, I think it was when they were casting, I think, Tour 2. I think that's when it was happening. And I was like, yeah, maybe, you know, maybe I'll reach out to my agent. And I, you know, I was with a different agency in LA at the time. And I called them up and I was like, yeah, you know, I really would like to be seen for this show. I really think I would be ripe for it. At least that's what people tell me. And I know they're seeing people. I'd love to go in. And I'll never forget. She says to me, yeah, look, Kylie, Des, he just loves his girls smoking hot. We really don't think you have the right essence for the show.
Yeah. Ow. How? That none, hurt, yeah.
None taken?
Yeah.
that's what my agent told me at the time. And I was like, oh, it's so, the reason why it just felt like such a wild statement, it was like my entire resume up to this point was like that, it was like hot girl in my underwear in whatever show it was, right? I was just like, this feels really, I couldn't quite digest it. And then I thought, maybe have I got it wrong? Have I been doing it wrong all of these years? Anyway, I digress. I had a meeting with a different agency. Let's just say that. And I remember sitting in his office and he was actually, you know, a friend of mine, and he ended up, you know, moving into a talent agency. And we sat down and he's like, well, I mean, listen, I'm not a miracle worker. Like, do you know Mary? Does she know you? Does she know your work? I was like, well,
Mary Sugarman.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've been in for her. That casting office just hired, I was doing Mamma Mia at the time. I was like, they just hired me for Mamma Mia. So I would think that I'm on their radar. And he's like, well, I mean, I'll call her right now. Do you want me to call her? And I was like, what? Like right now when I'm sitting here? And he's like, sure. Picks up the phone. And I hear the whole conversation. Oh, yeah, Kylie, I love Kylie. Yeah, let's get her. I'd love to see her. And the conversation was maybe 15 seconds long. And it was that easy. And I think about the commission that he made all of those years. And then the movie and like the all of it, right? And it's just because, and this is what I mean by like, everybody needs to kind of come in with a point of view and have something to say. And I was being the artist, I was like, you should listen to me. I think I know what I do well. Trust that I've got it. I will never go into a room. Trust me. Like, it's my reputation first. I'll never go into the room and fall flat on my face and embarrass myself on purpose. Obviously, like I'm very invested in this. So take a chance on me kind of thing. And they didn't. And we parted ways, me and my former agent. And, but when I went in for Mary, for that round of auditions, I had like a really great initial. Then I had it was a great initial. Then I had a work session with Mary and Richard the next one. And this is before I went in front of the whole team. And I did my thing, and I walked out being like, it was a base hit. You know, it wasn't a home run. And I walked out and Mary chased me down the hallway. And I feel like she missed half of the work session with the person after me. I don't even know who it was, but she stopped me in the hallway. She was like, Kylie. I was like, hey. And she's like, what the hell was that? And I was like, I'm sorry. And she's like, you know, you walked out of the room and Richard just went, well, she seems kind of soft. And she's like, you're not soft. I know you, you're not soft. You can do this. And she's like, here's what you're going to do. And you're going to come in. And she's like, I don't give a shit about the other roles. You have to nail Mary tomorrow. Nail Mary. And basically nail Mary and the gig is yours kind of thing. If you can't do that, if you can't deliver on Mary, there's nothing we can do for you kind of deal. Mm-hmm. And so I really took that information and I went home and I worked my ass off on it. And I was like, soft? There's one thing I'm not, and it's soft. And I went in the next day and I nailed Mary, which was ironic because I think they always saw me as a Lorraine anyway, but I was for the swing track, obviously. Right. Yeah. But yeah, that's just kind of, she's going to give it to you straight. And I attribute like the fact that she didn't have to do that, that she took the time to level with me and tell me what I needed to hear to get the job done. That was a responsibility that she didn't have to me at all, but she took the time to do that. And I think that's why she's truly one of the best in the business. She operates from a place of heart first, and she's been on the other side. She knows what it's like to be a performer. And she gives a shit, and that's nice.
I remember something as simple as my initial auditions. She was like, do you play guitar? I'm like, yeah. And I was playing like these different things and all, you know, like all this stuff. And she goes, John, she's like, you're like talking yourself out of a job. And I said, what do you mean? She goes, play one thing. Cause I was playing like all these different licks on the guitar. She's like, the first one's great. She goes, you're only giving yourself a chance to like mess up after that. She's like, crush it with a nice clean, like, you know, guitar intro, impressive lick and be done. You know, it was great advice.